Bonjour, welcome to the show. My name is Ben, and I just might be addicted to carbs.
Je m'appelle Noel, and I've been trying to go a little lighter on the carbs lately, but I am a big fan of a good baguette.
Yes, agreed. And here in the U.S., we have a little bit more leeway with the definition of what a baguette is. And despite how important carbs might be to Noel, to myself, and to our super producer, Casey Pegram, in France, it turns out, they're much more important, crucial.
Big time. That's why for two centuries, there was a law on the books in Paris that basically established a continuous, free-flowing access to bread. And this was most important during the summer months when a lot of Parisians take vacations, and it's a big deal. The, you know, Paris can feel like a ghost town during July and August. And this law was established because the last time that France ran out of bread, well, you know, there were riots in the streets and, people got decapitated and hanged.
Yes, there were reigns of terrors that were related in a way to bread. And for anyone who's interested in the role that food can play in social revolution, we promise you it's a real thing. You're not crazy. Butter had a role to play in an earlier episode.
It's true. And bread's always been a pretty important staple of the French diet. In fact, according to the Smithsonian, the average worker during the 18th century spent half of their wages on bread, because not only was it delicious and, you know, something you could put a nice piece of brie on, I mean, it was how they got their sustenance more than anything else.
Right. It's true. You know, we have to consider in ages past, people didn't often have the same concept toward food or toward nutrition that you would find to be more common today. For example, a lot of times today, people eat for pleasure rather than mandatory survival. And if bread wasn't available for a lot of people, it could mean that they might starve. This was so important that in Napoleonic times, police were even in charge of grain inspection and quality control, sort of an FDA, but oriented entirely toward bread. And when there was a wheat shortage, things went crazy very quickly.
Yeah, it's true. Like, you know how in the United States, we refer to the president as the commander in chief because he's in charge of the military for all intents and purposes. Well, in France during this time, the king was referred to as boulanger du royaume, or prime baker of the kingdom. That was kind of a pretty serious job. And in fact, there were these Napoleonic codes that were established for everything from how to proof the dough to make the bread to the ratio of the ingredients. This was all very, very, very important. And it not only was important because of its place as a staple food, but it was a cultural thing as well. And they took their bread making very, very seriously.
Yes, absolutely. It is not an exaggeration to say that all hell broke loose if something went wrong with the bread supply. In 1775, there was a wheat shortage and grain prices skyrocketed. And to make things more complicated, the new king at the time, Louis XVI, decided to allow a free market of grain within the country. And this led to speculation. Flour merchants, who were already kind of a distrusted segment of society, along with bakers, held back grain supplies.
Yeah, I read somewhere that certain flour merchants, to kind of control prices, would cut their flour with everything from like chalk to even bone meal.
Yeah, and sawdust as well, right? And this sounds maybe on the offset a bit silly, right? Maybe it sounds like too much of a nanny state to have laws controlling bread, but it is incredibly important. There hadn't been a famine in France for decades before this occurred, but all of a sudden, the poorest people in the country were unable to buy flour for bread, and they rioted.
Yeah, and this, what was referred to as the Flour War, is considered by most historians as being the precursor to the French Revolution that took place 14 years later. And actually, you know what? I think now would be a good time to introduce a new segment we've been kicking around. You see, our super producer, Casey Pegram, is also our resident Francophile. And so we are going to have a segment with Casey that I would affectionately like to refer to as Casey on the Case.
Or Thus Spake Casey. We're still kicking it around.
It's true.
Casey Pegram, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hello. Thanks, guys.
So, Casey, we sort of buried the lead just a touch in this story. We talked a little bit about how these days, during the summer months, Paris kind of clears out a little bit. And you go to Paris about mm-hmm. once a year. Would you say that's pretty accurate?
Oh, yeah. They call it les grandes vacances, the big vacation. And, yeah, Paris in July and August gets extremely hot. Many, many places are not air-conditioned, climatisé. And that's actually a point of advertisement. If like a movie theater has air conditioning, they will put that like salle climatisée. And it's sort of like, even if you don't care what the movie is, just go in there and chill out for a couple hours. So yeah, Paris basically empties out and just becomes like the domain of tourists for a couple months.
And when we were researching this episode off air, we really wanted to lean on your abilities as a Francophone to tell us a little bit about the laws that we're kicking around, that it is true, right? Noel and I haven't been just making stuff up for the past few minutes.
No, it's real. So you guys had talked about the flower war, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the precursor to this event that happens in October of 1789, where this poor, poor baker, Denis Francois, who was confronted by an angry mob that basically thought he was hoarding bread, possibly just to drive the price up or potentially to keep it on reserve for royalty and military people, things like that.
This was a big deal, especially consider what had happened during the flour war,
yes,
where they thought the king was hoarding the flour so that the people who relied on it for their daily sustenance could not get what they needed to make their daily bread.
Right. So this is kind of just a continuation of those tensions. And as we see, an angry crowd confronted this baker at his bakery, demanded that he come out, brought him to what was then called a Place de Grève, which today in modern times is known as l'Hôtel de Ville. It's the city hall, essentially. If you've ever been to Paris, you've probably walked by this place. It's kind of a landmark. It's very central. It's right by the Seine, and it's a cool building. But they brought him to this public square, basically summarily executed him. They hung him, and they decapitated him, and they paraded his head on a pike around town. They brought it to other bakers to kind of intimidate them.
Wow.
Apparently, they weighed it on a scale at one point at one of the bakeries.
Jeez, man.
And
a baker's scale.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, exactly.
Oh, wow. Why the baker, though? That seems like such misplaced anger. I mean, isn't he just trying to, like, feed his family? Was he considered part of the aristocracy? Was he looked at as being an enemy of the people, of peasants?
Well, he would have been, you know, relatively middle class and controlling access to a resource that everyone needs. What's interesting to me, too, is that we don't have any solid proof or whether he was actually doing something wrong.
Most of what I read said that in retrospect, this was a totally innocent guy that just got caught up in like an angry mob that was looking for somebody to blame for the problems that were going on.
So what happened next?
Well, so after this guy was killed, the National Assembly meets and they basically decide that they're going to declare martial law and that they are going to ban all public gatherings, any kind of public protests. There will be a red flag that signals the presence of martial law. Mm. So you'd be given three chances to disperse. You could take from your group, you could select six people to kind of represent your grievances and whatever solution you're kind of angling for. Everybody else is supposed to disperse peacefully. There'd be a second warning and a third warning. If after that third warning, you're still there, you're still protesting, whatever, they are authorized to use armed force against you and basically kill an entire crowd if they decide to stick around.
So this is in the thick of the French Revolution, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is like...
This is coming a couple weeks after the March on Versailles,
yes,
which is what brought the king back to Paris and kind of returned rule of the country to Paris where it had been displaced to Versailles.
Let them eat cake.
Right.
Right. So that was... Even that catchphrase is tied to this whole idea of bread being such a crucial component of everyday life, and the fact that Marie Antoinette was so clueless and insulated that she would just say, oh, it's fine. Just, they can eat cake, right? Because they have that, surely, right? Isn't that the joke, kind of?
It's
that,
a little bit out of touch. Yeah,
yeah, very much. Yeah.
And there's an interesting tale within that too, about the folklore versus the fact of that. But you're absolutely right that it was allegedly, or according to the legend, in response to them saying, you know, the people have no bread.
No, but I saw it in a film. So it was a Sofia Coppola film. So that's definitely exactly how it went down.
Is she the one who did Dracula?
No,
she was in Godfather 3.
Okay, right.
Remember on the stairs? No spoilers.
Right.
For Godfather 3.
Godfathers Take Manhattan, right?
That's the one. But no, this is really interesting because then this is ultimately, and correct me if I'm wrong, Casey, because you are in fact on the case. This is what led to this decree in 1790 from Louis the 16th that put this system in place because, okay, so they weathered the grain shortage. They got through that. But now it was like, what happens if the bakeries close?
If everybody takes the grand vacation at the same time.
You did say, though, that didn't really become a cultural thing until a little bit more into the 21st century, the idea of that particular time for vacation. But even still.
Right. So the 1789 or 1790 ruling has to do with basically empowering authorities to make sure that bread stays in regular supply so that people don't have a reason to riot. Mm-hmm. When it gets to into the 20th century and you start getting things like guaranteed vacation time for workers, and this kind of culminates in the cultural tradition of the grandes vacances, where people take as much as like 6 weeks off consecutive during the summer. Everybody leaves Paris and goes to like the coast of France. Mm-hmm. Then it became an issue because if everybody left at the same time, if everybody decides to take off July, you're probably not going to be able to get like a decent baguette in Paris for that month. And that's, you know, they view that as a pretty serious problem.
So what happens to the consumers? Whatever will we do?
Right, exactly. So it was then decided that these boulangers, bakers, would have to coordinate with their local authorities when they wanted to take time off, and, you know, it would have to coordinate from all the other bakeries in the area such that you never found like a neighborhood that just didn't have a bakery open. So someone would have to go in July, someone would have to go in August.
And it was half and half, correct?
Right. And it almost became like these two groups almost identified like, I'm a Julyan, I'm an Augustian. It's very strange.
So this wouldn't be on the case with Casey if we didn't hear a little sample of your dulcet French tones. So could you give us a little reading from this ordinance, Casey?
Sure. This is Article number 6 of the Law of October 21st, 1789, against gatherings or martial law, in other words. So here we go, the three warnings.
Do we get a little poetry music in the background?
Some kind of dramatic accompaniment.
Faute par les personnes entourées de se retirer en ce moment, il leur sera fait à haute voix par les officiers municipaux ou l'un d'eux trois sommations de se retirer tranquillement dans leur domicile. So they will be warned in a high voice by the municipal officers or one among them. Three warnings to return peacefully into your home. Trois sommations de se retirer tranquillement dans leur domicile. Three warnings to return peacefully to your home. La première sommation sera exprimée en ces termes. The first warning will be expressed in these terms. Avis est donné que la loi martiale est proclamée, que tous attroupements sont criminels. So, notice will be given that martial law has been proclaimed, that all gatherings are criminal. On va faire feu. We're going to shoot. Que les bons citoyens se retirent. Good citizens, go home. À la deuxième et troisième sommation, so on the second and third warning, il suffira de répéter ces mots, on va faire feu, que les bons citoyens se retirent. So on the second and third warnings, they're going to skip the preamble and just say, we're going to shoot, good citizens, go home. L'officier municipal énoncera que c'est ou la première ou la seconde ou la dernière. So the municipal officer will announce whether it's the first, second, or third warning. And if you're not out by the third warning, all bets are off, you're probably going to get shot.
Beautiful. I mean, terrifying, but yeah. Beautiful performance, yeah. Casey.
And this has been On the Case with Casey.
You know what? I am a big fan of that segment, Noel. Don't you think that added some context?
It added some real umami to this episode, I think.
And there's more to the story because, you see, it turns out this law isn't just something that happened and then disappeared. It has been, as we said at the top of the show, on the books for centuries, and it's been periodically revised, rewritten, reworked, as Casey mentioned, with the emergence of workers' rights.
Totally. And because, you know, you don't really see a whole lot of huge, large-scale famines happening in Europe these days. So it was relaxed in 1995, and we mentioned this briefly during Casey on the Case, but half of the bakeries in Paris were able to shut down during the month of July, as long as the other half stayed open. And then bakers were actually required to post notices mm-hmm. in their windows of where a customer could get a croissant or a baguette within walking distance, because it was all about this community neighborhood vibe. You know, it was you had to be able to walk there. It was very much part of day to day. You could not be expected to, you know, hop a taxi to another part of town.
My word, the very idea. This is a really cool detail to me because I like it. It seems humanizing. It's not enough just to tell the authorities, hey, I'm going to be gone in July. You got to support your people too.
Totally. And it feels like we've gotten away from it being there being concern over riots and it being much more about maintaining that fresh baked bread culture that has sustained in France throughout the generations.
And you will hopefully be as thankful as we are to note that the consequences for this are no longer, you know, life-threatening.
Absolutely not. In fact, even when they were still on the books, if you didn't get permission, you decided to do what you wanted, you could get a fine, which was a minimum of, I believe, 11 euros a day, mm-hmm. Which is around 13 American dollars back in, I think, 2005, or about $20 in 2017 bucks.
And the story continued. In 2015, the French government eased some of the remaining restrictions on bakers' holidays as part of a larger effort to streamline their notoriously sluggish bureaucracy.
I mean, can you imagine having a law on the books for 200 years? Can you imagine what other weird little esoteric legal nuggets remained on the books? Mm. Probably stuff about spitting in public. I don't know.
Beret quotas.
I would imagine.
I hope I don't get in trouble for that one. But it's true. When this relaxation occurred in 2015, a lot of local Parisians feared there would be a baguette crisis. Mm. And to some degree, they did experience one. Because the government no longer coordinated baker holidays for the industry, bakers had a tough time knowing when they should leave. The ones that stayed open ran out of bread quickly, and some were worried that their quality was suffering because there was such an increase in demand.
Yeah, because literally for the first time since the revolution, bakers could go on vacation whenever they wanted.
Like normies, which is the baker word for us.
Exactly. So yeah, I saw an article in the Daily Mail with some great quotes of kind of like the scoop of how this is playing out today in the streets of Paris. There's a quote from Lynn Siegel, who is a Parisian resident, that goes as such. I went out to get a baguette a few days ago, and the two closest boulangeries to me were both closed for the first time ever. Then the next day, a woman on the street stopped me asking where the closest open one was. Only the bad ones stayed open.
Only the bad ones.
The bad ones.
And this – we should paint a picture of why this is so important. Even now, for something to be called traditional homemade bread, only four ingredients legally can be used: flour, water, salt, and yeast. 70% of bread is still produced in boulangeries, those local bakeries, rather than industrial warehouse factories. You know, while worries of a bread shortage have, you know, fallen a little bit in the years since the regulations loosened, there are new worries on the horizon. It appears people are eating fewer and fewer baguettes.
Yeah, it's true. Per capita consumption of baguettes has fallen by more than 80% since 1900. And at that time, the average person in France ate more than three of them a day.
That's a lot, isn't it?
These are big, man.
Right. And today it's, as of 2017, it's down to about a half a loaf a day. So analysts will attribute the drop to multiple factors, including maybe this preference for a lower carb diet or concerns about gluten consumption, while some bakers say it's because the bread just doesn't taste as good as it did back in the, you know, the good old days of the pre-revolutionary France.
Yeah, in that Daily Mail article, there's another quote from a Parisian artist named Anthony Stephenson, who talks about being pretty bummed out that because of the scarcity of high-quality bread, he's now having to buy what he refers to as, quote, those strange half-cooked mini baguettes from my local supermarket and putting them in the oven. So that is not cool for Mr. Stephenson. And I actually found an article in the New York Times. The headline is A Baker's Crusade Rescuing the Famed French Boulangerie. Because of this decrease in bread consumption, there is a sense that that culture, that history of artisanal baking is being lost. So a man by the name of Pascal Rigeau, a French businessman, has decided to try to save the fledgling French, authentic French boulangerie by coming up with a model that allows scaling of these businesses while also using higher quality ingredients. And in order to do that, he is going to shrink each store, making it where you only have to have one person to run it, and by buying ingredients centrally that allows the shops to enhance the quality and also increase bargaining power, and it limits the number of products sold. So you might have a store that only sells baguettes as opposed to a diversified like bakery where you have all kinds of other pastries.
So this isn't a big warehouse plan. This sounds like a community of what would be smaller stores that are in keeping with French tradition. This could help trigger a resurgence, right? Because we saw the numbers of these traditional bakeries dropping over the past few decades.
That's right. Looks like in 2015, there were 28,000 of these authentic bakeries, and that's down from 37,800 just 20 years earlier. And that is from a 2014 report on bread in France from Euromonitor by Alexander Goranson.
And on this note, we will end our exploration of bread, war, and revolution in France. However, if you feel like the story should continue, we would like to cordially invite you to France's annual Bread Festival, usually held in May. This gives you enough time, hopefully, to schedule your plans. And of course, we want pictures if you happen to go to the Bread Festival, and let us know if you have lived in France or, like Casey, spent a great deal of time there. We'd like to hear what your favorite bakeries are. We'd like to hear your impressions of where bakers stand in French society today. I'm very interested in that because over just the course of this episode, we saw bakers being unfairly characterized as villains, and then as models of the working class, as masters of their craft. So what are they today in 2017?
You can write to us at ridiculous@howstuffworks.com. You can drop us a note on Facebook. We're Ridiculous History there too. I think we have a Twitter now. You can tweet at us at Ridiculous History, or you can check out our Instagram page, which is also Ridiculous History.
And of course, most importantly, let us know if you have suggestions for an episode we should cover in the future.
So please join us for more gaffes and laughs on the next episode of Ridiculous History.